We're going to start here at the top of Chav Bet Amud Aleph by the two dots. The Gemara now is going to posit a number of questions with regards to our Mishnah. The Mishnah said if one is Zorei or Choresh Telem, that he can be Chayav for eight Lavim in one shot. The Gemara is going to actually ask now, but we could actually expand that number. Why are you limited to eight? Until this point in time, we maneuvered around and we kept it at eight. Now the Gemara is going to posit a question from a number of different Lavim that could have been included here. So the first one is Mati Flarav Oshia, the Chshov Nami Hazorei of Nachal Eitan. Maybe someone who plows in a Nachal Eitan, that would add an additional lav. Vasaratei Mahalchon, what is the lav? Asher lo yaved bo v'lo yizareah. This is actually talking about an egla rufa, the pashtut ha-pasuk. Really, the pashtut ha-pasuk is that the place where you must perform the mitzvah egla rufa is in a place that is barren and it's not fertile. Yet the Gemara over here is darshaning that even after the egla rufa is done there, that that place is asher lo yaved bo v'lo yizareah. That is a restriction against working or planting the area after the egla rufa is done or performed in this area. So Matkif Lab Rav Chananya v'lechshov nami amochek tashem b'alichato. What happens if he has the Shem Hashem on somehow inscribed or written somewhere, and along with his plowing, he erases the Shem Hashem. The lav comes from this. It's a requirement to wipe out all the avodah zarah when you come into Eretz Yisrael. But then it says, or juxtapose, it says, lotasum ken l'Hashem l'koychem. Don't do this to Hashem. So that which you do to the avodah zarah, you may not do to Hashem. So the mechika is restricted. Matkif Lab Rav Yavahu v'lechshov nami akutzeitz et biharto. Someone who pulls off a baharet, pulls off a negat zarat from his body. Be careful. And we know that Hishamer, Al, and Lav all come to teach you a lotase. So Hishamer b'negat zarat means don't remove or pull off a negat zarat. So if he does that, we'll add an additional lav. Someone removes the choshen from the efod, or a mesir b'de aron, someone pulls out the badim from the aron. They have a lav from this. Lo yasuru mimeno, that's talking about the b'de aron, the poles that hold the aron. You're not allowed, once they're placed in, you're not allowed to remove them from the aron. But lo yizach choshen m'ala efod, is that the choshen over there, really, the pashut the pasuk is that the reason that you have the p'til t'chet, the strings and the chains to hold the choshen on the ephod is so that it will not push away, it will not bang away from the ephod. But here the marzoni is loizach choshen al ephod as being a lav, that you may not have the choshen removed from the ephod. Matri flav ravashi, Rav says, v'lichshov nami al choresh ba'atzei asherah. What happens if he made his plow out of avodah zarah, wood of avodah zarah? V'zaratei me'achal, oidbach b'liadcha mi'umah min acherim. So that you're not allowed to leave anything over from the avodah zarah. You're not allowed to get hana or any usage out of the avodah zarah. Now, v'latki flav ravina, what about v'lichshov nami al kotzei tilanot tovot? What happened if he's plowing along the way and he ends up cutting down nice fruit trees along the way when he's plowing? There's a restriction against that. When it talks about sieging a city in Sefer Dvarim, it says, when you're using the wood or you need trees to build the siege on the city, you may not take from fruit trees to do that. You may not take from productive trees in order to do that. And that's a restriction, a general restriction, Chazal say, against cutting down fruit trees or trees that produce produce, and therefore you violated the law if you cut them down. So of all of these, the Gemara gives no answer to. The Gemara actually leaves it without giving an answer, and that's what Tosfos asks. Wait a minute. How come the Gemara never answers over here? And on top of that, the Gemara previously, when we tried to add on additional lavin, the Gemara had answered, Tana v'shir, right? Oh, let us say that he left out some. He didn't do an exhaustive or exclusive list. He left out. The Gemara says, no, what? He said eight particular, and eight means eight, not Tana v'shir. So Tosfos over here says, you have to say that it's Tana v'shir, because we know he didn't enumerate these lavin, and the Gemara has no answer as to why he didn't enumerate these lavin. So it must be Tana v'shir. How is this different than what we saw in the previous daf? From the previous daf, we said, Tana v'shir, what do you mean? It says eight. Eight means eight. Because over there, when the Gemara is asking about Tana v'shir, the Gemara is asking about an extra lav of Yom Tov. An extra lav that should have been subsumed under a category already mentioned in the eight that are there. So if you're mentioning, or if you were mentioning that topic already in the eight, you should include all lavin that come out of that topic. The fact that you left it out, you can't claim is Tana v'shir. It must be that he's intentionally leaving it out. Over here, these lavin are something that's totally separate from what's mentioned already in the eight that are enumerated in the Mishnah, and therefore Tana v'shir is possible to answer over here. That's what Tosfos says. All these questions that we just asked over here are Tana v'shir. We have no answer for them. We have one last question where the Gemara will answer. For that is, V'amar lei Rabbi Zeira le Rabbi Mani, v'lechshov nami k'gon amar shvua shlo echrosh v'yom tov. What happens if he takes a shvua that I will not plow on Yom Tov? So I'll add an additional lav over here. So when it says, Atam lo kochal shvua. the shvua doesn't work. Why? Mushba ba'omed mahar Sinaihu. He already has a shvua from Har Sinai. He's already acquired by the Torah not to plow on Yom Tov. To take a shvua to not do something that you're already not required not to do, that's not... not only not permissible, but it just doesn't take effect. The Shvua has no ability to take effect. We're going to learn that as we come into the Gemara in Shvot, but as we learn the Etiv, and therefore this doesn't qualify as a Shvua. So I'm like, oh, damar Shvua shel echrosh ben b'chol ben b'yom tov. He took a Shvua that was all-encompassing. He says, I will not plow, whether it's a weekday or a Yom Tov. Demigo dechala lei Shvua b'chol, because the Shvua works for weekdays. It works for Yom Tov as well. So this is what's called a Isser Kolel. There are two different types of Isurim that can be added on to a previous Isur. We have a principle. If you have one Isur, and then you try to add on another Isur. So generally we say, Ein Isur Chal Al Isur. One Isur can fall onto another Isur. If you already have an existing Isur, we don't multiply or add on additional Isurim. That's only true if the Isur does nothing to change either the status of the object or the subject that is in violation. There is something called an Isur Mosif and an Isur Kolel. The Isur Mosif references the object of which the chait is done. Isur Mosif says if it makes the Isur greater, right, or more expansive, then that Isur will be Chal Al Isur Acher. In that case, we do say, now this is all of Isur Chal Isur is subject to machloket Tanaim, and we're not going to get into it. I'm just explaining to you based on what the Gemara has right here in front of us, which is that we would say Ein Isur Chal Isur. Generally, Isur is not Chal Isur, except for the exceptions of Isur Mosif and Isur Kolel. So the Isur Mosif, which we just explained over here, is, for instance, if you have a piece of meat that is already asur, for instance, because it's chalev. And then on top of that, it becomes notar, meaning that it's chalev, so it was already asur even before being kochim, before it was going to be put on mizbech. They put on mizbech, and then it gets left over from a korban. Now, added on to the Isur chalev now is an additional Isur of notar. So that is an additional Isur, an Isur Mosif. It adds on additional Isurim to the object. Since it adds on Isur to the additional Isurim to the object, then it is Chal. The same thing by, for instance, a woman. A woman that is already a married woman. She's an Eshet Ish. And then on top of that, we add the additional restriction of chamuto. He marries this woman's daughter. So the woman was already restricted to him beforehand because she was married. But on top of that, now he adds on an additional isur, which is the isur that she's now chamuto. She's also his mother-in-law. And the mother-in-law, meaning that Eshet Ish, just gets a punishment of chenek. A mother-in-law gets the additional punishment of sreifa. So if that's the case, I've added on isur, I've expanded, the object itself has become more asur at this point in time. So when we do that, that's called isur mosif. So in that case, we say, ein isur chal isur, except if there is, or one of the exceptions, according to some of the Tanaim, is that if it's an isur mosif, you can't add it on. That's not what we're discussing over here. We're discussing what's called an isur kolel. Isur kolel is where I add on additional people, additional subjects will now be asur to this object. So the example that's given, for instance, is the reverse of what we just had before. A woman who is his mother-in-law that then gets married. He married her daughter, but she was a single woman at the time. The reason that she's asur to him is because she's his mother-in-law. Then she marries. Now, Eshet Ish, well, don't worry about Eshet Ish. She's already his mother-in-law. Who cares that she's an Eshet Ish with the reference to him? But her being an Eshet Ish affects other people. Now, not only is she restricted this individual who married her daughter, she's now restricted to many men in the world because she's now an Eshet Ish. So that's an Isur Kolel. The Isur of Eshet Ish expands the number of subjects that are asur to this object or asur to this individual, this woman. And that's called an Isur Kolel. So even though in general we'll say an Isur Chal Isur, when it's an Isur Kolel, it encompasses a larger group of people, subjects, then we will say that it includes not only those that are added, but even the individual is already asur. And in our case over here, where the Isur is to plow on Yom Tov, you're already restricted from Har Sinai. But when you take a Shvua that now is Kolel, includes not only Yom Tov, but includes even a Yom Chol, now you've done something, you've expanded. The new Shvua includes more days than you did before. The Isur of plowing now not only applies to Yom Tov, it applies to more days. So that's called an Isur Kolel. Since in the Isur Kolel, therefore, we now include even Yom Tov, and we include that Isur on top of it. So now you have an Isur Chal al Isur, and the Shvua will be Chal. Mar says, either the ita b'sheila loktani. The brisha doesn't include things that you can ask. You can do hatarat nedarim. Since you can do hatarat nedarim or hatarat shvua over here, we don't include it here because it's something that can be reversed. The law, is that really true? Our mission doesn't mention very hektish. One of the objects, one of the isurim that you violate in the mission is hektish. Hektish is a form of neder that can be nitar. You can have hatarat nedarim by hektish. Where it says b'chor, we're not talking about regular hektish. We're talking about b'chor. B'chor is kadosh mibeten. It's born kadosh. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to take any neder to make it kadosh. Very nazir. Oh, and one of the restrictions that he violates here is that he's a nazir in a beit hakvarot. Well, a nazir is something that's done to a neder, and a nazir can be reversed by a hatarat nedarim. So my says, but nazir shimshon. We're talking about nazir shimshon. Nazir shimshon baritz moedam etimu. So he said, what's a nazir shimshon? So the way Rivan explains nazir shimshon over here is someone who became a nazir because the malach told him he is a nazir. He was told by a message from Hashem or through a malach that he's going to be a nazir. Therefore, the nazirut is irreversible. You can't change it because it's not something that's subject to neder or shvua, something that's given or demanded by a Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's called a nazir shimshon. There are other rishonim who believe that nazir shimshon can be entered either through being a nazir from the betin before they're born, or I mean that the parents already made them nazir before they were born, or maybe a person can accept on himself a nazir shimshon, and part of the character, part of the way that a nazir shimshon works is that you can't reverse it. It becomes a nazirut, the alma. But either way, wherever we become a nazir shimshon, the thing is that shimshon was not restricted for coming to tamei meit. So over here, why would that help you? If you become a nazir shimshon, one of the restrictions of the Mishnah is becoming tamei lemeitim. L'hai tano iser kol leitlei. So you have to say, and the answer in the end is that iser kol leitlei. He doesn't hold of this. When, even when it's Isr Chalal Isr by an Isr Kolel, he says it doesn't work. He says, Ein Isr Chalal Isr. You can't have one Isr pile up on another Isr. Even when it's an Isr Kolel, it doesn't help you. So that's the conclusion here. And again, that's the answer to that one question over here. Why Shvua is not included over here? Shvua is not included over here because the author of our Mishnah doesn't believe that Shvua would be additive, and because Isr Kolel does not matter, and therefore Ein Isr Chalal Isr because it's already Yom Tov and he's not allowed to apply anyway. So now the Gemara makes two statements that are really independent of the sugya above. It's Amar Rabbi Yoshia, Amar Bia, Shor, Psulei Mekdashim, Lokei Shnayim. Someone who mates a shor that is Psulei Mekdashim is something that was going to be a korban brought on the Mizbeach, and for whatever reason it's now not going to be brought on the Mizbeach, either because it has a mum in it, or because something else went wrong, we have to wait for it to have a mum, then we redeem the animal. Once you redeem the animal, the monies that you've taken have the hekdesh on them, and they're used to purchase an additional korban, or purchase to use something for hekdesh. The animal itself becomes chulin, and it can be eaten wherever you want, begvulim, it can be eaten, you can do whatever you like with the animal, except it says in the pasuk tizbach v'achalta that you're only allowed to eat it or use it for that purpose of eating and consuming. So the Gemara learns from that you're allowed to eat it, shecht it and eat it, but you're not allowed to work with it, and you're not allowed to shear it. Meaning that it's solely used for food purposes. You can eat it wherever you want, do whatever you like with it, but it can be only used for food purposes. So now, the explanation, or the way that Rivan explains this, is that this Psulei Mekdashim is really a mixed breed. It's part Kodshim and part Chulin. It's Chulin because you can eat it outside the Mekdash, you can just shecht it out by your house and eat it. Other than it's still Kodshim because it still has additional restrictions on it. There are still the restrictions against shearing and working it. So it's part Kodesh and part Chulin. Now the Rivan himself says, I don't understand why that's considered Kilayim or why that's considered Minim, but that is the statement over here. The Gemara is making that statement that they are to Minim and they're Kilayim Echad B'Sheni. Therefore, if you're Marbia, if you mate this animal with another animal, then you're in violation of Kilayim. Because if you use Kodshim, then he's Kilayim with the Chulim side. If you use Chulin, he's Kilayim with the Kodshim side. So either way you do it, you're going to end up with some form of kilayim over here. Now, our Mishnah, or the text here, Rav Gemara reads Lokesh Shnayim, that he actually gets two sets of Malkot. Possibilities to get one set of Malkot for a kilayim, and maybe another set of Malkot for being Avodah, that when he's mating the animal, that's actually using it for Avodah. Although most Rishonim take this out of the Girsa, and the Girsa is solely Lokeh, that he gets one set of Malkot. Now, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Amanhig B'Shor Psulei Mekdashim, Lokeh. Someone who drives a Shor Psulei Mekdashim is Chayav for kilayim. Now again, if he drives it with another animal, then the other animal is going to be kilayim with it. So you're not allowed to drive with two animals that are of different species. And by definition, this is a different species because it's a mixed species, and therefore it'll be kilayim with any other animal. Now the Rivan brings down the possibility that it even be kilayim with itself. And therefore you can't drive with this animal because this animal is kilayim by itself and be like driving with kilayim. Now, if that is the other case, Tosos points out that, first of all, what we're talking about here is not simply driving the animal forward. It means that the animal is actually pulling something or carrying something or pulling a caravan, doing something of burden, work of burden. Because otherwise, he says, how can you ever move a shore that is psulei hamikdashim? You can't take it anywhere. You can't move it anywhere. Because if you drive it, already it's going to be a problem of kilayim. So it must be, we're not talking about simply being manhig the behema, to move the behema to a different location. It means that the behema is actually doing something, pulling a masui or carrying something on its back. Either way, that's how you're violating the kilayim over here. And why is this the case? Why is that manhig b'shur psulei hamikdashim lokeh? Shari guf echad, you're right, it's one entity or one physical body, but the pasuk considers like two. Why is it considered like two? Because it's part chulin and part kodshim. So since it's part chulin, part kodshim, we look at it as if it's two entities. Even though it's one entity, we make it as if it is two entities. And that's the explanation of the Rivan. Obviously, the difficulty, and there's really no way to explain this, is, but why is it kilayim when you're talking about kodesh and chulin? The Rabbeinu Tam brings an alternate pshat over here, and he says that the kuntres was guided by his girsa in the Gemara. Whatever he's referring to in terms of probably the girsa, he's looking at Rashi being the Rivan, and he's also looking at the girsa maybe of Lokeshtaim or the girsa that he had here. The Rabbeinu Tam, on the other hand, says that by Psulei Mikdashim, it says that that you're allowed to eat it. When it comes to Psulei Mikdashim, we saw this earlier in the Perek, that when it comes to Psulei Mikdashim, Tamei and Tahor are allowed to eat it together. Since they're allowed to eat it together, we know that the Basar can become Tamei. And that's how we learned out that when Basar Tamei is restricted, because it says, Lo tuchal echol bisharecha, that which you eat in another shahr, you're not allowed to eat here. And what's the other shahr? That's katzvi v'ayal, that you eat tamei tahor yachtav. Even when you're eating tamei meat, it's fine. But the pasuk calls it katzvi v'chayal. Compares psulei mikdashim to a tzvi and an ayal. Compares it to two beimot. And that's what the Rabbeinu Tam says is the kilayim over here. Psulei mikdashim, according to the Torah, is classified as a tzvi and an ayal. It's not classified as a single animal. It's classified as two animals of a tzvi and ayal. And because of that, that's what creates all the problems of kilayim over here, because it's this mixed breed of called Tzvi v'ayal, according to the Torah. Right now, we move on to the next Mishnah. Kama malkinoto. After we've discussed all this of malkot, we finally get to the core. How many malkot do you get? When the Beis Din has to give malkot, how many do you get? So the Mishnah says, Arim chaser achat. Give 40 minus 1. Why do you give 4 minus 1? Because it's Shemar. It says in the Psukim, so it says in Parsha Kiteitze, Vayayim bin hakot harasha, v'pilo ha-shofet, v'ikaldo fanav, k'dei v'shato b'mispar. The next Pasuk begins, Arbeim yakenu, that he hits him 40 times, lo yusif, pen yusif lakoto al-eile, makar rabba, v'nikla achich al-einecha. So there's the word mispar arbaim. So the Gemara says, it says mispar arbaim. Minyan shu samuch l'arbaim. A count that is close to arbaim, the girsa probably here is minyan shuhu skum l'arbaim. A count that adds up to or reaches up to 40. Now we'll see in the Gemara also has this type of girsa. Most of the Rishonim have their Mishnah have the girsa of sokeim. Which means that when it says mispar arbaim, had it written arbaim mispar, had it written arbaim first, and then mispar, we would say means 40 exactly. 40 in count. But now that it says count to arbaim, it means do something that counts so that the next number afterwards will be arbaim, that will add up to the next number being arbaim. So the fact that mispar comes before the word arbaim teaches us 39 had been written arbaim, but mispar, we would have thought it meant 40. So that because of that, they darshan, that's 39. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, arbaim shleimot. So you get 40 full lashes, no 39 here. Where does he get the extra lash? Ben ktefab. He gets it between his shoulders. You're not allowed to give makot when you're assessing how many makot he can physically handle. You have to give him a number that is divisible by 3. So Amdua the Kabel Arbaim, and they assessed him that he could take all 40 lashes, right? Veloke miksat, and they started to hit him, and then Vamdu Shenyachol the Kabel Arbaim, and all of a sudden they realized that after a number of lashes, he's not going to be able to withstand all 40 of them, and they reduced the number. Then he is Patur. We don't make him go get healthy, come back, and get the rest of his makot, because the fact that they already started, they hit him, and now he was embarrassed already in Beit Din, he already had part of the hitting. That's enough. Since they started, and they had originally thought this would be enough, and now they realize it's not, done. Case is over. Amdu al kabel shmonasre. The beginning they assessed him that he could handle 18. Ushulakam, when they started hitting him, amru sheyachol kabel arbaim. They realized he could take much more. He go up to 40. Then again, he's patur. We don't say to him, okay, now take the full 40. Since they originally assessed him for 18, the 18 remains. If they already hit him for the 18, then it's done. What's done is done. Once he's yatsami beitin, we don't bring him back again to beitin to change the number. And we'll see that in the Rivan when we get to the Gemara. But based on our Mishnah, if they didn't give him any of the malchut yet, first of all, in the case where he was supposed to get 40, and then they realize that he can get less, and he got no malkot. Or in the case where he was supposed to get 18, and they realize he can get more, and he got no malkot. In that case, we will change the assessment, it seems like, from our Mishnah. Our Mishnah only says that the time he's patur is he got hit already, but he got some of the malkot already. If you got none of the malkot, then you're allowed to change the umdana, you're allowed to change the assessment. So Mar says, my time up. What's the reason between the Chachamim about that you get 39? Iktiv Arba'im b'mispar, had it written Arba'im and then the word mispar afterwards, Havamina Arba'im b'minyona, it means 40 by count. Asher Iktiv b'mispar Arba'im, now it read the word mispar before Arba'im, it means the count of Makot or something that reach Arba'im, Minyon Shu Sukeim et Arba'im, a count that reaches to 40, meaning the count that reaches to 40, the next number would be 40, and that is 39. So that's what we explained before in the Psukim in Kitetze. Amar Abba, Kamet Tipshai, how foolish people are. The Kaimi Mikame Sefer Torah, they stand up when the Sefer Torah passes. But they don't stand up for a Talmud Chochum. Why? Deal with Sefer Torah Ktiv Arbaim. The Torah writes 40. And the Rabbanan come along and take away one and say it's 39. I mean, basically, what Rav is pointing out is that people are very ready to stand up for Torah Shebichtav. They give such deference and reverence towards Torah Shebichtav. But when it comes to Torah Shebal Peh, they kind of dismiss it. What represents Torah Shebal Peh? That's a Talmud Chacham. A Talmud Chacham is the one who has the Nesorah, as the Torah Shebal Peh, the Chachamim, who are able to interpret the Torah. And he says, how is it that people give so much kavod to the Torah, but don't give kavod to Chachamim? Because we see here, when it comes to Torah Shebal Chtav, it's written 40. Yet Torah Shebal Peh tells us 39. And we see Torah Shebal Peh trumps. So if you stand up for the Sefer Torah, you certainly should stand up for a Talmud Chacham. So now, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Arba'im Shleimot, 40 whole ones. Amar Yitzhak, my time with Rabbi Yehuda. What's the reasoning of Rabbi Yehuda? Dichtiv. Because it says in Zechariah, Ma Makot Eila Ben Yodecha. What are those hits Ben Yodecha between your arms, meaning on your back? Amar, Hukeiti Beit Ma'avai. I was hit in the house of my beloved. So now, what is it coming to explain over here? The most likely thing it's coming to explain over here is what Rabbi Yehuda said in our Mishnah is, where's the extra lash given? We're going to see in the subsequent Mishnah about what or how you give the lashes to an individual when they're divided up by three. But now he has a number that's not divisible by three because he has the extra lash. Where's that extra lash given? He said in the Mishnah, it's given Ben Ktefav. So it could be that's what the Gemara is trying to bring over here. Or Rabbi Yitzchak says, what's the reason of Rabbi Yehuda that he give it in the middle? It's because of this pasuk in Zechariah. It says ben yodecha, that you get a hit between your arms. Between your arms means in the center of the back, ben ktefa, between the shoulders. So that's the one possibility. Other possibility, which is harder, is to say that it's come to explain why you get 40 lashes over here. Why do you get 40 lashes according to Rabbi Yehuda? So there are those that say, I think the Orach Naner suggests over here, that he gets 39 for the lav, for the avera, for kapara, for the avera, and he gets one bonus. It's like, you know, when they light candles for a birthday, they put an extra one for good luck. Here's also the extra one is Avas Hashem, that afterwards there's 39 for Isur, or for the Isurim for the Avera, and there's the last one, which here we say from the Pasuk that you got hit because Beit Ma'avai, that from the house of my beloved. I mean, it's for Avas Hashem, give him one extra one just to connect him with Hashem and remind him about the Avas Hashem. It's not something that's related to the Avera, but rather related to his relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Then the Chamim respond, Rabbanu, Rano Betino Kot, Shabbat Rabbanu Yudichtiv. That's not referring to Makot, regular Makot, it's talking about loving Makot. Loving Makot is what a Rebbe gives to a student, a parent to a child. And that's instructive Makot, not Makot that the Beis Din gives, and therefore you can't learn anything from that Pasuk. Now the Gemara is going to bring a Braita that seems to disagree with our Mishnah. Our Mishnah suggests that if you have to change the umdan, if you have to change the assessment, when you've changed the assessment, if he's already been hit, you can't change it anymore. If he's not been hit, then you can change it. Biraminu, we have a problem. Right? Lakai in lo lakaldo. Biraminu, we have a bright amdu lekabel arbaim. They went ahead and assessed him that he could get 40. He was able to take 40. Vichazru, they went back and they reversed their position. Vamdu she'en yachol lekabel arbaim. Then he said he can't take 40. Patur. He's patur. Here we don't see him getting any makot, and yet he's still patur. Amdu lekabel shmonasre. They assessed him originally to get 18. Bechazru v'amdu. And then afterwards they reassessed him. Shechol lekabel arbeim. He got 40. Patur. Again he is patur. So over here we see no hitting being done, and yet there's a patur once the umdana has been changed. So Amar Rav Sheshes lo kasha, no question over here. Hadu amdu liyome. Hamdu amdu lemachar uliyoma uchra. Depends when the assessment is done. So now there is a machlok tushanim, how to read this. The Rivan reads this about the assessment that's done on day one. How extensive is that assessment? So the first case in our Mishnah is that the assessment was given for that day. Beis Din made an assessment on that day that he could do such and such, or he could handle such and such. Later in the day, they come around and they reverse their position. Now, it's clear when they come to reverse their position that they nothing's changed with this individual. This individual was this way in the morning, and now it's the afternoon. Nothing's changed in his status or his physical being. So there's nothing changed in his physical being. The fact that they are now changing the umdana, they're changing what they assessed, that means that the original assessment was done, right, incorrectly. It was done inappropriately. If that's the case, when we get the new assessment, we're going to say, follow the new assessment, because the original assessment was betot. Now, that is as long as he didn't get any malkot yet. If he got some malkot already, then we say what's done is done and we're finished. But on the other hand, has he gotten no malkot yet? We're going to say reject or forget about the first assessment. Let's look at the second assessment, because that's the only one that is really valid over here. So that explained the first case. The first case in our mission is a case where they assessed him originally to get 40, and afterwards they realize that he can't get 40, he can get almost none, he can take almost none. So there again, if he got a malkot already, we say everything's done. But if he has yet to get malkot, then we say, listen, the second assessment is the real assessment, because the first one was obviously done by mistake. If that's the case, we're going to wait for you to get healthy, and then we're going to give you what you're supposed to get over here. Since they assessed today that he can't get any makot, then we have to wait for him to get healthy, where he can actually get some makot. That's our mission. The second case of our mission, where they originally assessed him for 18, and now they think he can get a full 40, again, if he got some of the makot, we're going to say, done. If he got none of the makot, again, we'll say, listen, now if he got none of the makot, the reversal is clear that the first umdana was a mistake, and then we're going to go with the second umdana of 40. The question is, once he's hit, why do we say, don't come back? So that the Rivan says, and I mentioned this in the Mishnah, he says, Ilkachim lakak. If you already got the 18 puchimata, we say go free. We're not going to have Beis Din bring him back. After he got hit, and then Beis Din let him go, they're going to bring him back to hit him more. That's a bizion to Beis Din. It's as if they made a mistake, as if they misassessed the whole situation. So we don't make it into a public issue that Beis Din was wrong in their assessment over here. So we say once he's patur, he's gone out, he's gone out. So we're going to Rivan. That's the explanation of our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is explaining a case where he was reassessed on the same day. Again, if he's reassessed on the same day, if we already carried out the punishment, the original punishment, or at least a portion of the original punishment, then we say he's done. Because the original assessment was done, he was nikla l'achicha, we don't talk about it, or because we don't want to bring him back to Beis Din, because it'll be a busha or bizayon to Beis Din. Then if nothing has happened yet, and they have yet to give him any makot, we go with the second assessment, because the second assessment was probably the real one. The first one seems to be a big mistake, and therefore if he was supposed to get 40, he'll get 40, not the 18 that they originally assessed. If he's supposed to get 40 and now he can't get any, we're going to say, wait, let till he gets healthy, and we'll wait till he can actually get some makot over here. That's the explanation of the Mishnah. Now the Braita, according to the Rivan, the Braita is explained like this, that on the day that they came to Beis Din, Beis Din assessed him for a large period of time. Over the next 2 weeks, this person could handle, if he's given his punishment over the next 2 weeks, he can handle 40 lashes. Or, if this person given his makot over the next 2 weeks, he can handle 18 lashes. Then on the day that we're coming to execute the punishment, we come and we assess him, and reassess, and we realize that there's the new assessment, that something's changed. Now, in this case, you can argue that the assessment changed not because nothing changed, because the individual himself got weaker, or something changed in the standing of the individual. So since something changed in the standing of the individual, we now have to look at the new assessment in the context of the first assessment. The first assessment was a good assessment, but it was a good assessment at that time. Now we're talking about a new assessment. The new assessment is done for what's current. So based on that, if it's an Omid Gomor, the first one was a great because they looked into it carefully and they did it right. But now something has changed. His physical condition has changed, and that's made him weak over here. Therefore, since the Omid Rishon is an Omid Gomor, if he already went downhill and he's deteriorated, then he's not able to accept them, then he's patur. Even though he got no malkot already, because he's already mitbazeh, this is what Ravan says, he was already embarrassed by being standing up there to figure out how many malkot he can get. He already had that bizayon, and since he already had that bizayon, we're going to say, let him go. Nothing to do over here. Now that we reassessed him, that he can't take any malkot, that additional, having two assessments already, that's enough, and we let him go at that point in time, because the assessment today is he can't get anything. But the original assessment said he could get some. So the fact that he had these two assessments, and that embarrassment, that's enough to let him go free. On the other hand, and when it's the other way around, when it was 18, and then we realize that he could do 40, in that case, we say, All right, he is Patur. Why? Because when they came to assess him on the new day and to get 40, he doesn't get 40 because the Omer Rishon, the original assessment, was a good assessment. True, at this point his physical condition might have improved, but the fact that his physical condition improved doesn't mean that we changed the original Omer. The original Omer was done. It was done appropriately and correctly. And now that it was done appropriately and correctly, we don't going to change it. So 18 as it is, so he'll get his 18 and it'll be Patur. So that'll be explanation of the Breita. So the Breita doesn't need the heading to actually be done. The Breita is talking about what the assessment is done over a period of time, and therefore the assessment on the day it was given was probably correct. It's just now the situation on the physical standing of the individual has changed. So therefore, we don't change anything. We assume that what was done originally was correct. And if either you can't carry it out now because you can't handle it, or you can carry out more now, it's irrelevant because the first assessment is what stands. And if there's enough embarrassment, we let him go. Whereas our Mishnah is talking about where he was reassessed on the same day. When he's reassessed on the same day, we assume that the first assessment was done in error. Since the first assessment was done in error, we now only focus on the second assessment, unless he's already been hit. If he's already been hit, that means that the first assessment already took place and there was a bizayon. We don't, at that point, now reverse and try to either add or subtract. We don't add because we're on bizayon based in to bring him back in, and we don't subtract anymore because he already hit. We say he's done. We don't wait for him to get healthy and get the rest of them. We say what's done is done, and he's all done. He's finished at this point. That's the explanation according to the Rivan. If he violated an Isser somehow, and he violated two Lavim, for instance, he plowed with Kilayim, and he was planting Kilei Akerim. So now he's in violation of two Lavim. Amdua Omeid Achad, if they assessed him for one assessment, Loke Upatur. If they assessed him for one of the Lavim, and he gets his malkot, he gets medical treatment, and then he recovers, and then they give him the malkot for the second case. How could our Mishnah suggest even that you're allowed to assess for two restrictions for one set of malkot? So Breita tells us you'll have to do each one separately. So depends how many malkot they think they can give him. If they at one time can give him 41 malkot, that means that he only gets for one lav, because a lav requires 39 makot. Now, if I go up to 41, that means I have an additional two above that. Two is not sufficient to be classified as getting makot for a lav, because you need a number that's divisible by three. So if he's only capable of getting 41, then he can only get makot for one lav. On the other hand, if he's capable of handling 42 makot, the first 39 will be classified for the first lav. The next three will be what he gets for the second lav, and it'll be poter, all but in one shot. So obviously, it's two assessments, but the question is, you have to assess enough so that there is enough makot for the second lav. If there's not a number up to three yet, or divisible by three, then you can't have the second set of makot count towards the second lav. So that's the case in the Mishnah. In the Mishnah, if he gets up to 42, no problem. He gets for both lavin in one shot, because he gets 39 for the first, 3 for the second. The Breita that says no one single assessment, there's a case of 41. There you got 39 plus 2. The 2 doesn't help you, because the 2 is not enough for the next lav, and therefore you only give him the 39. You wait to get better, and then he takes the second set of makot. So now, next Mishnah, which we'll do in tomorrow's daf, we'll spend the time on it. Ketzin Malkinoto. How is the Makot given? Kofeshte Yadav al Amud. He places him on a stump of some sort. It's a 1.5, 2 Amud high. They lean him over on that Amud, and they place his arms down the side, and then they tie them down, the arms over there. The Chazana Knesset. Now, the Chazana Knesset is a person who deals with all of the Tzarchei Tzibor. The Rivan says he doesn't know where the word Chazan, or the derivative etymology of the word from is. The Marshal over here mentions that he thinks it comes from the word Chose, to see, to look into, or a Navi is called the Chose, someone who takes care of Tzarchei HaTzibur, because he sees what the needs are. So then he's Ochez B'Gadav, when he takes him over there to the stump and he's tying him down, he grabs his clothing, grabs his shirt, Im Nikru, Nikru, if they rip, they rip, Im Nifru, Nifru, if they tear, then they tear. Now, Nikru is where they tear not on the seam lines, Nifru is where they tear on the seam lines. Actually, Megaleh Libo, but he has to open up the shirt, he has to open up his beged, so that his back and his heart are exposed, the front and back are exposed, because that's where they're going to give him the Malkot. So actually, this line here is actually lifted from Sota, is actually what they do to the woman Sota when they're dragging her around to the Mikdash to wear her down. It says, they grab her by the shirt, and it doesn't matter, Nikru, Nikru, Nifru, Nifru, it doesn't matter what happens to her, because we're after the embarrassment over here. So also over here, when they grab the shirt, we're not really considering, or they don't think about what happens here, or the embarrassment caused, because that's exactly what we want. We want the busha. Part of the punishment, part of the kapara is the busha that's caused over here. Then you have a executioner stone from behind him, and there Chazana Knesset Omeid Alav stands on it, Rutsabi Ado, and he has the whip in his hand. It's made out of Ritzua Shel Egel, it's made out of from a cow hide, Kfula. It's achat l'shnayim l'shnayim l'arba. It's actually made out of two strings made out of cowhide that are folded over, that are looped over. So you actually have two strings that actually become four, because when you loop them over, you have four at the end. That's what considers, so that's what makes up the whip over here. Shtei ritzuot shel chamor. The gears here probably is not chamor, because in the Gemara it's going to tell us that it's a chamor, but it's probably just shtei ritzuot, and the Gemara is going to tell us that it's from a chamor. Olot v'yordot ba. They go up and down it. So up and down it is a question about how to explain this. One of the possibilities is that they're attached at the end. They're attached at the end of the cowhide strings. At the end there, they're the what do the whipping at the end. They're a looser string at the end, but they're tied on so that actually when you lift up the whip and bring it down, they slide up and down the whip. They're not tied down or stitched in. They just looped onto it. Since they're looped onto it, when they lift up the whip, it goes up, and then when they bring it down with the force, they fly out to the end, and that's what does the whipping. Or the other possibility is that they're actually woven into the end of the cowhide strings. Those cowhide strings, when you weave them in, you have to go up olevi oday. When you weave, you go up and down. So they're weaved in at the end, and they create the, again, the snapping or the end of the whip that's going to cause the whipping or the inflict the damage from the whip. So now, the handle of the whip is a tefach wide, and the whip itself is a tefach wide, and we'll deal with that in the Gemara exactly how they determine how wide it should be. And the end of the whip reaches around to his, the beginning of his stomach, meaning that you have the back of the individual and then you have the front of the individual. So you whip him across the back, and so that the whip reaches over to the end of his back, and that's the beginning of his stomach, beginning of the front around the edge. Now, what's clear from here, and the Rivan points out, is that they're hitting him from the side. I mean, if you hit from the back, you can't hit across his back. You have to be hitting from the side in order to hit across his back. So Rivan says that he positions himself on an angle behind him that he can do that. He can actually hit him across the back. Below your shave, he doesn't sit down. He's actually bent over on this stump. Shenemar, v'ipilo ha-shofet, the psukim by the case of makot. It says in Parshat Ki Tetzeh, v'imimin hakot rasha, he's getting makot, v'ipilo. You push him over, you push him down, ha-shofet. So you don't make him sit, you bend him over. The person who's doing the whipping comes down with the whip with one hand, b'chol kocho, with all his strength, with all his power. Valkore, the person who reads, which is obvious here to the Gemara, it's not learned here, but it's obvious from the Gemara. Gemara Kritut discusses it, that Bikore Tiyah, that there has to be a Kriya, that there have to be psukim that are read while the punishment is going on, and that which is read at that time is found from the psukim from the Tochacha that is found in Parshat Kitavo. Im lo tishmar lasod kol divrei Torah zot haktuvim b'sefer zeh liyirat Hashem anichbad banorah hazeh et Hashem lokeha v'yifla Hashem et makotcha v'et makot zarecha makot gdolot v'ne'amanot v'chalayim ra'im v'ne'amanim. So that's it. We learned before early in the Masechta that v'yifla et Hashem et makotcha is referring to the v'yifla, the whipping of the Beit Din. And therefore, we read these pesukim, and then it's vechozer l'tchilat mikra. If he reads it and he finishes it before they had finished giving the makot, then he goes in and repeats the pasuk again, over and again. Now the Mishnah here adds in, which is actually not found in the Mishnah. I know it's not found in the Rishalmi, so probably most of the Groh and others take this out of the Girsa. They also read these pesukim, shmartim et divrei abrit hazot, and you say v'hurachu micha peravon, which is probably vechozer l'tchilat mikra. That's probably all eliminated from taken out of the Mishnah. It probably does not belong here. V'mei tachad yado. If he dies while the Shliach Beis Din is giving him or whipping him, then he's patur, because he's doing the Shliach with the Beis Din, he didn't do anything wrong. If he adds on one more than Beit Din had authorized, and then the victim dies, or the person being sentenced dies, then he goes into Galut, because let's say he killed him b'shogeg, obviously he wasn't intending to kill him, he made a mistake and added on one, by doing that mistake he killed him, then he goes into Galut. If the individual, because of the fear of the whipping, then either defecates or urinates on themselves, patur, then they go free, meaning that embarrassment's enough that they don't have to continue the makot in order for him to be patur. The standard is different. For a man, he has to defecate in order to have that embarrassment. For women, urination's enough to be the embarrassment, and then they will be let go, because they've already made kabo, their kapara, their busha, their punishment is already done through this embarrassment. Again, tomorrow we'll deal with the Gemara that explains or goes through the Mishnah, each piece of this Mishnah.